Welcome to Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Witchlit is brought to you by Thousand Bolt Press, a family-owned independent publisher established to produce the books we want to see in the world. Titles including Changing Paths by Yvonne Abreu, Conjuring the Commonplace by Lane Fuller and Corey Thomas Hutchison, and my latest book, Verona Green, can be purchased directly from thousandvoltpress.com or wherever you buy books. Cubby Michael is an occult herbalist and magical practitioner specializing in the ritual use of poisonous and psychoactive plants. He studied religion at Arizona State University and has been a folk herbalist since a young age. He owns and operates the Poisoner's Apothecary, which includes producing materia and educational resources for the poison path. Cubby has been blogging since 2016 for Pythios Pagan and the House of Twigs, and has written articles for This Witch magazine in 2020 and The Witch's Almanac 2022. His first book, The Poison Path Herbal, came out in 2021. His most recent book is Leo Witch with Ivo Dominguez Jr., and he currently resides in St. Petersburg, Florida, and travels the country teaching people about poisonous plants. Cubby Michael, welcome to Witchlit.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It was lovely to read your list of accomplishments. So before we dive into talking about all those great things, our first question for everybody on the show is why write? Why write books?
Wow, that's a really good question. You know, I've been working with plants and practicing magic for such a long time, but really like at the core of all of that has been reading and lots of note-taking, of course. And so I've kind of been a writer since I was very young. I started out more creative writing, poetry, and I would write a lot of my own spells and attempted some fiction, which never really got anywhere. But that was always kind of the main drive. That was sort of like a dream that I always had that, you know, to be an author, to be a writer and have that kind of be my main thing was always sort of this dream that I didn't necessarily think was ever going to come to fruition. But it's something that's always been, you know, a really big passion of mine, just really therapeutic and just sort of that transmission of information and almost kind of channeling these things that it, now that I'm here, it's sort of like, this is always what was going to happen in one way or another.
Oh, that's awesome. So what you said, you didn't think that this would be something that happens for you. So what changed for you? What, like, this is, yeah, I'm a writer and I'm going to publish.
Yeah. I mean, it started out when I was in school and I would just kind of study topics of interest. So I majored in religious studies, and then the minor focus was on European history. So I studied a lot of the world religions and also kind of the evolution of the Abrahamic traditions, and just sort of wrote about things that I was interested in. And then in 2016, Jason Mankey got a hold of me and invited me to start writing for Pathos Pagan. Mm-hmm. And that's what really kind of allowed me the opportunity to really kind of exercise that writing muscle and start, you know, these short pieces on a regular basis that really kind of led me in the direction that I'm in now.
Yeah. Jason really had like a little cauldron of writers there that, you know, have come out. So many books I feel like have come out of his time as an editor there.
Definitely. I think he was really instrumental in this whole, whatever, you know, movement or whatever it was, just in how he chose people, really got like an awesome sort of core selection of writers that have been around. And mm-hmm. It's been really awesome. Very lucky.
Yeah. So what did getting your first book published like? Well, so what did getting The Poison Path look like?
That actually took a few years. It was meant to come out in 2020. Which I kind of lucked out, I think, having it come out in 2021. You know, so I was able to do like the in-person book launches and actually see people. And I know a lot of authors that had publications come out during COVID, kind of missed out on that opportunity. And we're able to do it after the fact, but I was kind of glad that it worked out that way. But I actually didn't wind up finishing with the publisher that I started with.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that. I think I can share it and talk about it at this point. So I was originally contracted with Wiser and had almost gotten to the very end of the editing process. And then there was sort of a shift. So we kind of dropped that. And then I landed with Inner Traditions, thanks to my friend Nicholas Pearson, who's also an author with them. So kind of wound up, I think, in the perfect place, just because they do have so many titles already that are kind of related to what I do on sort of like psychedelic spirituality and ethnobotany and things like that. I'm in good company.
Yeah. Oh, and Nicholas is great people. He was our earlier guest on the show and we had a great conversation. I really enjoyed Poison Path, and I bought it some time ago and I was like, okay, I'm going to reread since you're going to be on the show, and then read Leo Witch. And I really enjoy your voice as a writer. You have like this, this may sound weird, and it isn't meant to sound weird at all, but it's like a gentle, authoritative voice. Like you clearly are an expert and you get that across, but it's also very much like someone, like a friend talking to you about, you know, what, I mean, especially with the Poison Path herbal, which, you know, there's some safety stuff. So you want an expert, but you leave so much room for people to kind of experience stuff on their own. It's always, this is, you know, these are the facts that I've uncovered, you know, here's some stuff about this, but, you know, kind of go out on your own and have experiences with these things as well. And I really enjoyed that. It's, though you are factual, there's a lot of you in your writing.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you noticed that. And it's not being passive aggressive or anything like that. But, you know, the plants that I work with, they have very sort of dramatic personalities and loud voices sometimes. And that sort of comes through. But it's definitely presented through kind of my own lens and my own personal practice, you know, with it being such a broad and all encompassing kind of topic that you can really approach from a lot of different angles. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it shows up in your work. I am curious, like how did you find yourself on the Poison Path? Like what spurred that interest?
I was kind of an avid collector of plant lore and correspondences. And I, you know, for the first probably decade of my studies, just compiled these notebooks of different correspondences. And then you start to, over time, notice kind of repeating patterns or repeating themes that you resonate with. And I feel like that kind of hones you in on specific plants and practices that you resonate with most. And, you know, it finally kind of directed me to the poisonous plants. They kind of, you know, they have a lot of that old world traditional witchcraft kind of lore attached to them. And that was something that really attracted me. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think if you get into witchy stuff and you are at all interested in plants, like you kind of find your way to those, like you said, those kind of old world witch plants, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And there wasn't a whole lot really even written about them. You know, there's a book called The Witch's Garden by Harold Hansen that came out in like the 1970s that went through and talked about a lot of the plants in the nightshade family and their witchy folklore. But then we kind of had like the you know, neo-pagan renaissance in occult publishing and, you know, books like the Scott Cunningham's Herbal Encyclopedia and things like that, which is, you know, super important primary source, but it kind of, a lot of them I found left something to be desired when it came to working with the more baneful herbs. So that's what really kind of drove my investigation, was knowing that there were these, you know, sort of historical precedents in the Middle Ages and early modern period, working with these plants both medicinally and magically. But then there was kind of a gap in that modern magical lore up until, you know, probably the past maybe 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think about, I'm doing a book that has some herbal stuff in it right now. And I've been using Scott's book and yours for references. But one of the things I always find very much of the time, like you said, is every time there is mention of a poisonous or considered baneful herb, Cunningham's like, don't work with this. Just don't, you know, no. It's just kind of like a hard stop. And I like that, you know, people have kind of taken up that flag and said, no, you know, we can work with these plants. And I love even Nicholas Pearson's approach, like with the flower essences of them. If you don't feel comfortable handling the plant, there are other ways to work with the plant where you can still, you know, have that experience without, you know, maybe the more, hands-on, I guess, approach to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the flower essences from the Witch's Garden by Nicholas Pearson. That's a really, really awesome resource too. And just like drawing different energetic correspondences and really getting a feel for sort of the vibration and energy of each of the plants. You know, because the plants are kind of the physical container, but they really represent like these larger spirits and forces and currents of energy kind of being concentrated through them. And once you kind of get a feel for that and what that is, then you really start to gravitate to sort of your core plant spirit allies.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really love in the Poison Path Herbal are the glyphs for the plants, the sigils for the plants.
Yeah.
So what was that process of developing those like? Because I love that that's part of the book to have this, you know, also like a visual representation for the plants.
Yeah, I thought that was really important and just trying to kind of show as many different ways possible to working with these types of plants, because it's definitely not all about, you know, ingestion and extreme contact and really working with them physically, but also tapping into their spiritual energy. And one of the most powerful ways to do that for me is kind of once I'd gathered all of this herbal lore and I guess kind of distilled that into something that made sense that I could connect to mentally, and then being able to connect to that energy and then create these sort of symbolic representations to then continue to strengthen that connection. And it's something that anybody can do. So mine are just sort of examples that anybody's welcome to use and work with, but it's also something that you could sort of create your own personal symbols, just using a basic kind of sigil making technique and the names of each plant.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I also, again, one of the things I appreciate about your work is like, here's my practice. Here's what I can tell you, but yeah, this is a starting point for the reader. It's not prescriptive.
Thank you. I'm glad that comes through.
Yeah. So I could talk to you all day about poison plants and all of that, but I want to make sure that we talk about your newest book too. So I know this is like a big undertaking, with Ivo Dominguez Jr., this whole series of Zodiac witch books. So how did you get involved in this project and what was it like working with Ivo?
Ivo is a pleasure to work with and an absolute sort of infinite resource when it comes to, you know, the astrology is just mind blowing. And he contributed the majority of that when it comes to like your rising sign and moon sign and all the kind of more particular astrology. And then I contributed sort of the witchy side of it, incorporating, you know, more magical practice and occult concepts and things like that to really tap into and kind of manifest the unique power that is each of our sun signs. So he reached out about collaborating on that. And there's a number of other contributors there too that have included different recipes, rituals, guided meditations, all of us kind of falling under that particular sun sign, mm-hmm. But all through his sort of Sagittarian guidance, since he's the, mm-hmm. the author of all 12 of them. So there will be a whole series for each sign by the time it's all done.
Yeah. I am a Scorpio witch, so I'm looking forward to the Zoe House book next year. But I've found something. I've read three of them so far. And by the time this comes out, folks will know who those other two are. but I love that even if it is not your sun sign, there's a lot in the books that's interesting. But I was curious, like from a writing standpoint, I feel like, you know, obviously the Poison Path Herbal was your baby and your project from the beginning. And then you're kind of writing to a spec, I guess, for the Zodiac Witch books. So how is that process different for you going from, you know, writing? Because I know you're also working on a second book with your Poison Path Herbals. So what is that like to kind of switch gears for you as a writer?
That kind of caught me off guard. that was a pretty big transition and just kind of like what I was going through at the time. Just a lot of really big changes, you know, personally, professionally, and just like some really intense stuff happening. So it was like I had to really shift gears from, you know, kind of being identified as this poison plant person that works with all of these dark and nefarious things and kind of, you know, starting to self-identify with that and really kind of getting like trudged down in some of that more Saturnian energy to then almost go to like the complete polar opposite. And now I'm talking about being a Leo and being ruled by the sun and, you know, working with light and color spectrums and just all of these very sort of light side things that at first I didn't really feel like I was maybe the best candidate to represent all of the Leos. And I've kind of never, up until I think probably writing this book, I always sort of told people like, oh yeah, I'm a Leo, but I'm not like a great Leo. Like there's other parts of my chart that definitely come out way more. So having to really kind of think about and process that and embody that was almost like, it was kind of like the balance that I needed to kind of bring me back out of the poison path work and remind me, you know, that there is this total other side to me as a person and magical practitioner and definitely about balance, the light and the dark.
Oh, that's awesome. I hadn't thought about that aspect of it, but yeah, that makes sense. Did you find it difficult to kind of write? I know that each book kind of has like section, you know, each book in the series has sections. And so the co-author has like a thing they have to hit. Was that weird? It was like your word count, like all that stuff kind of changes when you're writing like that.
Yeah. Some of it was really tricky and just having to kind of think back on, you know, like my most Leo witch experience or different qualities that a Leo is typically thought to embody and how that kind of comes out in me or things that there's a section on what sets a Leo off and how to kind of avoid it or, you know, remedy those sorts of things so that you don't show up with some of the less desirable aspects of your signs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely a good personal exercise for me to have to articulate some of those things that I really hadn't thought about in a while.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it would be a very different process. And I'm just kind of fascinated by, you know, co-authoring anyway, because I have not personally done that. So I'm always interested in how that kind of works for people. So now, I don't know if you're finished. Are you still writing the second book or are you kind of more in the publishing process of that?
The second book, what's the working title? The Poison Path Grimoire. I finished the first manuscript of that, turned that in, and they'll be having their editorial meeting this month, I think. And then it'll get bounced back a little bit down the road and I'll have a lot of changes to make and things to go through. So that editing process has begun.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting to have that first hurdle of actually finishing the manuscript.
Yes, definitely.
Did you find it different writing the second book kind of on the same topic, or what was that like?
This one, so I started writing what would eventually become the Poison Path Herbal, the first book, back in 2017, 2018. So there's a lot of stuff that has kind of changed, and things that I've learned and sort of grown from, and things that I've seen, you know, sort of in the community, that, you know, thing topics that need to be addressed or discussed more. So for this one, I really went more for the practical side when it comes to magical practice, where the first book was more on history, correspondences, and then a lot of phytochemistry and extraction and preparation. And this next book is more on the occult end of it, really working with the plant spirits, working with them in specific spells and rituals that are kind of honed into what each of those plants represents. Because that's one of the things that I get asked about the most is, you know, how do we work with this? How do we use these formulas? Like, just what do we do? And trying to kind of dispel that idea that these are somehow separate from any of the other plants or formulas or spirits that we work with, and kind of providing people with a little bit of a structure and some creative inspiration to start building kind of their own rituals around specific plant spirits.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think, you know, like, it's as a, when you kind of step into authoring, you know, these books that require a lot of research and time and all that, how do you then find in that, like, balancing your personal practice with that research and writing time? Like, how do you suss that out in your own life?
Oh, well, I think a lot of it just comes with experience, and that sort of is part of the poison path. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, you know, therapeutic doses and specific ways that these plants can be worked with safely when it comes to, like, topical application or even oral ingestion or different ways that they can be formulated. But I think really what it comes down to for each practitioner is kind of that individual experience, and using those things as a guideline, but really sort of starting at the beginning, because we all have that sort of apprehension and, you know, a little bit of fear and sense of taboo when it comes to, you know, coming in contact with a lot of these plants for the very first time. And that's a really important sort of initiatory experience that I think everyone has to kind of go through. And then once you have that first contact, you develop a much more innate kind of understanding for the nature of the plant that you're working with. And I think that sort of breaks the locks off of a lot of the gates that are held in place, you know, sort of in our mind and things that get talked about and information that's floating around out there, because the Poison Path community is largely an online community of, you know, a lot of people sharing experiences and information, but it's all about kind of walking the path on your own and experiencing those different levels of thresholds to kind of change your understanding about what makes a plant poisonous and, you know, what poison even means, because it can mean so many different things.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's, I don't know, one of the things I think is interesting, and you bring this up in the herbal too, is that there are, you know, there are poisonous or what are considered baneful herbs, and then there are plants that have, like, associations with witchcraft or death that, like, people, you know, like parsley, like, you put it on your plate, you know, it's in a salad, and it's not particularly dangerous to ingest or anything, but it has a kind of dark occult history of this plant that is kind of innocuous and you can buy in the grocery store.
Yeah, parsley, tomato, Tobacco, which can be kind of ambiguous. And that's just kind of what I've started calling dark herbalism, which is sort of this investigation of these plants, whether they're poisonous, toxic or not. And where did they get these associations from? What do those associations actually mean? What different things do they bring up in us emotionally? What do they represent when it comes to like our relationship with plants, people, the natural world, all of that?
Yeah. And one of the ways I think you've done, in addition to sharing your books with the world, you run a conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Botanica Obscura, for folks who don't know, or haven't attended, do you want to talk about that a little bit and kind of how that came about and what that's been like to build this, like, still, I guess, online community, but in a very different way than just, cat. It's, I guess, a little more organized online community.
Yeah. So that's really kind of my baby. We'll be in the third year in 2024. So super excited that is still an ongoing thing. And all of this sort of happened. I don't know if it was fate or destiny or just luck where I kind of landed in the right place at the right time and just all of these things sort of moving and swirling around me. And I really wanted to start a conference or gathering of spiritual plant practitioners that encompassed the poison path, psychedelic spirituality, left-hand path herbalism, traditional herbal medicine. So we've got the more academic kind of clinical phytochemistry side of it, but then also very much grounded in the spiritual. So just wanting to kind of use the platform that I've built over the years to share the work of other plant practitioners, because there are so many amazing planty people out there doing work similar to me. And really I just enjoy it. It's just like hanging out with a bunch of my friends for an entire weekend or last year for two weekends.
And I will say, for folks who have not attended or have thought about attending, I think for an online conference, like, the last one was two weekends. And like you said, there's such a breadth of information. And I really love that you make the videos available after, because it's a lot of information to absorb in two weekends. But also, I was just thinking, like, for folks who may not have a lot of money to spend on conferences and travel and stuff like that, it's such an affordable, like, great value conference too. Like, your attendance rate is reasonable, and there's just so much information. Like, it's just such a great resource.
Yeah, it's really grown to become pretty huge. I think we had 32-34 individual presentations last year over the two weekends, and I was kind of thinking about cutting it down a little bit for this year, but it doesn't look like it is going to go that way. It'll probably be just as big. But I wanted it to make it accessible and to make it different enough from other witchy spiritual online conferences that it didn't, necessarily take away from that, because they all have their own special things to offer too. But the main thing, the main focus of Botanica Obscura is really kind of supporting and promoting and getting everyone's work out there. So it's not, maybe necessarily the highest paid conference that you could present at. But I try and do like above and beyond when it comes to sharing all of the work that everyone else is doing. Mm-hmm. That's why I promote it for 6 months.
And I just felt like it was the first time I attended the last one. And I just feel like it was such a great community of folks, like just the conversations in between presentations and in the chat during presentations and stuff. Like, it was, it really was like, you could tell that you had curated this as like a couple weekends of friends talking about, kind of nerding out about plants and stuff. I mean, it was just really, I had a lovely time. So I will also flog that people should go.
So. Yeah, it's just a really great community of people, and you know, everybody's super friendly, and it's just, there's just so much to share and so much to learn. And it's just a really good feeling, you know, being able to be part of that.
Yeah. How is that like as a conference organizer? I mean, like, I know having done some conference organizing in my past, like an in-person event is like a whole different thing. So how is that for you? Like, just, it's a lot of work still, even for an online conference.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost a full-time job. Like after everything kind of calms down from Halloween, I'm pretty much doing conference stuff until the conference happens in spring and March. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that there are definitely conferences out there that are much more organized and, you know, have teams of people that are sending out these really well put together emails and things like that. And I'm obviously a fire sign. I'm a Leo. So it's all very much like, let's get it done. Let's just get to like the crux of what this is all about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it all comes together almost on its own. It's really kind of weird how all this stuff happens.
Yeah, that's awesome though. yeah, I admire anyone who takes that mantle on as like an organizer for those kind of things, because it is a lot of work and you're dealing with all the personalities of the presenters and all the personalities of attendees. And it's a lot to take on. So maybe being a fire sign is one of the keys. So what are your goals for that? Like because you've kind of shifted away from your online store and stuff. So like what's your future look like? What have you got planned without saying like, what's your 5-year plan, Kobe?
Big plans, I hope. I feel like I'm still just kind of getting started. And the reason for the decision to kind of move away from more of like doing my own online sales, I still want to make everything accessible and available. And there are a lot of other poisoners out there that make some really, really beautiful, awesome formulas too. So I know like it's not going away, but sort of my long-term desire is to really focus more on the writing, teaching, and facilitating events like the conferences and kind of sharing and supporting the work of other people too, and kind of being the networking middleman of all of it.
Yeah. All right. It's a good place. You know, I think that's a good place to be. And I mean, funny, it's kind of the impetus for the podcast too. Like, I'm not great at selling myself, but I'm a good hype person for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's easy to shout out other people, I think, but maybe not so much when it comes to yourself.
Yeah.
What's you're a Scorpio, right?
I'm a Scorpio. I'm a double Scorpio.
Nice.
Yeah. But I have a stellium in Libra, which I think is my balance there. So, yeah. And it's funny, until I was looking at the zodiac, you know, the witch books. Was like, you know, I mean, I always joke about being a Scorpio, and then it's why I'm dark and weird. And I was into, you know, like aliens and monsters and stuff when I was a kid. But I've also like, you know, like my rising sign is Taurus. And I think that that's what people usually guess, is that I'm a Taurus when they meet me. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. It's my rising sign. But yeah, it's interesting to me to think about, because I think a lot about, and this is probably true for you working with plants, you know, you think about planetary influence. I've always thought about planetary influence, I guess, more than astrology, like more like planetary magic and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, same.
But it's really interesting to kind of overlap them, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, you get a lot more nuance and flavoring when you incorporate that too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm grateful for people like Evo and, you know, other writers on astrology, because it's such a deep topic. Like, there's just so much information. I mean, it's hard to be, excellent in all things. So I'm grateful for people who pick those lanes that I can read their books.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Astrology's always kind of been like a a peripheral interest for me, or even, you know, astrology, planetary magic, all of the celestial things has always kind of been part of it, but on the side, just to really understand, you know, sort of providing like a symbolic language to understand and express the different energies that are embodied by plants and spirits and kind of like flavoring your spells. It's just an easy way to, I think, communicate that through those archetypes.
Yeah. Like for you, I guess this is a good kind of segue to kind of a question. Like for you, like as a researcher, because I think about this, like in like writing the, especially the Poison Path Herbal book and your new book, maybe more than the Leo Witch, because I feel like that came from a lot of personal, it's just read like a more personal experience, or a more personal telling, I guess. But like when you think about like the books, your go-to books, I mean, we talked about Scott Cunningham and some other stuff, but like, who are your, like, oh, this is where I go to find, you know, information about these things. Like, who are your go-tos for your research?
Gosh, it's been such a long time that I've kind of become my go-to. I hate to even say that, but Paul Bayerl, the master book of herbalism and the, I think, compendium of herbal magic, I think is what it's titled. Those are super awesome resources. And then, of course, another recently repopularized resource for more traditional plant lore is the Plant Legends, Lyrics, and Lore by Richard Folkert. That's a really good one where you get like some of the like early Christian syncretic like folkloric things before sort of the modern witchcraft movement. So that's a really awesome one. And then, you know, when it comes to poison plants and nightshades, there really wasn't a lot of books where it was all in one spot. So it's really kind of spread out across all of these different resources. But one of the probably most influential early resources for me was through Harold Roth and what was originally his website Alchemy Works, and then the book The Witching Herbs that came out in 2017.
I get like doing research lately, the Folkard one definitely has come up a lot. And it's funny when you go, when you start looking at like Cunningham's work and some of those herbals from that time period, you can see, you can kind of trace some of their stuff back to Folkard. But I think it's interesting moving forward, like where those strands, and I you said, maybe I shouldn't say I'm my own expert, but I think that's important. I think it's important for people to say, yeah, no, this is, you know, my personal gnosis that I've verified, and I'm sharing that with you. Because I do think that, I don't know, I feel like I've talked about this a lot on the show and my opinion is ever evolving, but I'm of two minds that I'm really glad that we're in this age of occult publishing where folks tell you where they got stuff, you know, either footnotes or the bibliography or whatever, you know, that we have not like hard academic rigor, but people are showing how the book gets made in one way or another. And then I also really want to this to be a living tradition. I think it's really easy to kind of get frozen in amber, like, oh, this plant does this thing and this what it means and this is what you do with it and that's it. And so I love when you said, you know, I've become my own expert, because to me, that means this is a living tradition that we are continuing to grow and discover and find out. And it's not, all the work hasn't been done, I guess.
Yeah, we think about them as like old world witching herbs or having like this traditional or classic sort of witchcraft lore sort of fixed in history. And I think there's like a certain amount of nostalgia that people have kind of looking back to that. But when it comes to poison plants and working with them, you know, moving into the future, like we're really just barely scratching the surface. And then you start bringing in like ideas from the psychedelic renaissance and working with plants as entheogens for mind altering effects and different things like that. Like this is really, really just the beginning of like this re-remembering of how to work with plant spirits and plant medicine.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I will say, rereading your book, I had forgotten that you talk about coffee as an entheogen in the book. And I was like, because of my personal chemistry, I am a kind of a teetotaler these days. Just stuff doesn't agree with me. And I was like, but I still drink coffee. I always joke that coffee is my one last vice. And like, maybe I should talk about coffee differently. Like, maybe I should talk about it in a different way, because it is, I mean, it is ubiquitous. And again, it's those kind of hidden in plain sight things I think we don't think about.
Yeah. And that's part of what I talk about a little bit more, I think maybe in the second book too. And, you know, it doesn't have to be poisonous. It doesn't have to be psychedelic or hallucinogenic, but thinking of just like stimulants or plants mm-hmm. that help your mind focus, or mm-hmm. aphrodisiacs for generating different states of trance for various ritual intentions, and kind of matching your state of consciousness with the plants that you're working with, depending on what types of rituals and spells that you're doing.
Yeah. And I just love that there are, and I think this shows up at the conference and in your books and in the other stuff that's coming out, is that there is not one path, right?
No, it's a very crooked, winding path.
No, I love that. Oh gosh. What's exciting for you right now? Like in your work, in life, like, I feel like, you know, you've got a couple books under your belt. You've got another one coming. This is like it's always interesting to me, because I think it's, there's always that like weird kind of postpartum when a book comes out mm-hmm. and you're like, how did, you know, you've worked on it. Like you said, you wrote this book, you know, the first book, like what, 6 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So what's exciting for you about this path that you're on now, and kind of how things have shifted for you?
Oh gosh. I mean, it definitely is kind of a postpartum, I guess, now that you put it that way. I've always equated like writing a book to what it would feel like to have a baby. And there is, it's, you love it so much, but then there's a certain point where like, you don't want to look at it. You don't, or you know, don't read it front to back for a couple of years. So I'm just now kind of like rereading through the Poison Path Herbal, now that I've been able to get the Poison Path Grimoire out there. And kind of my next avenue of like personal study is really looking at the development of modern toxicology and sort of the idea of poison and how that has developed throughout history. How it's been connected to not only witchcraft, but ideas about like plague and disease and contagion and all of these things that have just, you know, in the past 3 to 4 years become super prevalent and important in modern society again, and how that kind of influences us and we influence it. And it's really sort of a parallel to, you know, how we treat each other, and, you know, how we set up these little boxes and definitions and what's dangerous and what's not, and what's acceptable and what's not, and really kind of looking at poison as this, you know, sort of abstract concept that really communicates and touches on a lot of these things.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting to me that there has been this kind of resurgence of people interested in things that I think, and I think you point this out, maybe in both books, but I know you talk about the Poison Path Herbal. You know, like you said, with that neo-pagan resurgence, there was this real effort to be safe mm-hmm. and shiny and not be too scary. And now I feel like, I don't know that the pendulum has swung so much as like things have come back to the surface, I guess. And I'm interested, like what, I have ideas about why I think that's happening, but I'm curious what yours are. Like, why do you think people are drawn now away from this like love and light kind of more new agey approach to the occult that we've had, back to this like, I guess, even older way of thinking about witchcraft and occultism and, you know, working with plants and that. So why do you think we've shifted again?
I think that it feels more primal to people and really touches to like a lot of the inner things that we just don't typically like to share, that we like to keep secret. I think too that collectively, you know, just in the past 60 to 70 years, like we've really kind of experienced a lot of really intense global trauma and kind of pushing through all of that and really like on this sort of cusp of like finally being able to transmute that pain and just nastiness into something else. And I think that poisonous plants sort of represent and reflect a lot of that. And then if you kind of combine on top of that, like the, you know, sort of word it just like the mushroom therapies and even just like adaptogenic mushrooms, it doesn't have to be psychedelic mushrooms, but incorporating that in and just the way that people are viewing their health and all of that. But I just totally like side-railed myself on answering that question.
Okay.
I had something really important that I wanted to say about it, but I lost it because I got distracted by the mushrooms.
They are distracting.
But for witchcraft in particular, I've kind of found through my own research that so much of it was sort of presented through that lens of Wicca, Gardnerian Wicca, different things as a religion. And now I think people are getting back more to sort of a folkloric tradition. Mm-hmm. But if we look through like some of the early books, I think it's Witchcraft Today. There's actually a section in it where Gerald Gardner pretty explicitly makes a stance against incorporating any kind of psychedelics or mind-altering plants into the tradition. And I think that had a lot to do with the time period that it was happening in the 60s and 70s, so the distance from the hippie counterculture.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we look at the work of Robert Cochrane, who I think was maybe a little bit earlier, we actually see him really embracing the use of Amanita muscaria, deadly nightshade, mandrake, henbane. There's actually a book that talks about kind of the early emergence of those Cochranian traditions in Britain. And, you know, him taking this stance of like, we need to work with these different plant allies and I'll experiment on myself. And so there's a much more sort of openness to that. And mm-hmm. I think that if he would have stayed alive another 30 years, that modern witchcraft would look very, very different than it does or did. Maybe mm-hmm. it would look more like it does now.
Yeah.
Only sooner.
Yeah. We might be having a different swing in the pendulum now.
Who knows?
Yeah. No, that's I hadn't thought about that particular aspect of it, but I do wonder, like, you know, and we've talked about Scott Cunningham and we've talked about him on the show before, but like I wonder too with him, had he lived longer, like would he have also kind of had that shift in his thinking too? Like, you know, I think, unfortunately, I think a lot of stuff gets laid at his door that he doesn't really deserve because he's not here to defend himself, you know, for one thing. But, and so many people do rely and are walked through the door of Scott Cunningham, right? So mm-hmm. I think you're right. What would it have been like if Robert Cochrane had stuck around, if he had published, you know, books and had I feel like Americans especially came late to his influence, obviously. You know, he really was more of a tradition in Britain. But it's fascinating, like the alternate history of the modern occult revival. What would that look like? There's a book for somebody if they want to write it.
I think so. I think there's something to be found there for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I love alternative history anyway, so that would be a fascinating idea to think about. But so we have, we try to keep it to an hour. That doesn't always happen. But before we go to our game of chance question at the end, I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of plug what's coming up for you. This will come out at the end of January. And obviously you will have a conference on the horizon. So do you want to tell folks how to find you and find out about that?
Yes. So by the time this airs, the tickets for Botanica Obscura Conference will already be on sale. They go on sale on the winter solstice, and they can be found on Eventbrite. You can also visit the botanicaobscura.com. Wait, let me rephrase that. botanicaobscuraconference.com website, which has all of the presenters for 2024, all of the presentation topics, and all of the other information as far as like different books that are coming out, because we've got some of our presenters that will have new titles available. Those are all up on the website too, mm-hmm. that you guys can check out. And that's botanicaobscuraconference.com. And you can also follow on Instagram at Botanica Obscura Conference for all of the updates there.
And for you, if people want to find out more about your work,
you can visit thepoisonersapothecary.com. So that will still be up and running. You'll still be able to see all of the different offerings as far as formulas, jewelry, things that are available. There's also a blog page on there. And I do have a separate website that's more so focused just on me as an author and teacher, different events that I'm doing. And that is occultherbalist.com.
Awesome. And amazing that you could get that as a URL. That's cool.
I know, right?
And we'll have links in the show notes for everybody for that too. So our last question is a game of chance. And I joke that, you know, as a Scorpio, I'm interested in, you know, obviously more what other people consider dark and spooky things are things I don't want to talk about. I'm going to roll a die, and mm-hmm. depending on what number I roll, you'll get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money. Those things we're not supposed to talk about, but I love talking about. And if I roll a 6, you get to pick which one you want. And the questions are for you. So it's your work and stuff we've talked about. So it's not completely left field kind of stuff.
Cool.
So 2 sex.
Yes. Game?
So I was thinking about this in terms of Leos, like I think of Leos as like larger than life personalities. Like most of the Leos I've known have been like really big personalities. But then mm-hmm. I was also thinking about like, I don't think there's a lot in the book about sex magic in Leos, but I'm fascinated by this. So like we were talking about sex magic in Leos, what's the superpower for Leos?
Oh gosh. It is the glow that we emanate, that when you're close to us, when you're in contact with us, it lights up your life and you get to experience all of the luck and magnificence that comes with being a Leo. And that can be very alluring. You know, there is a lot of glamour magic in the Leo witch, but when it comes to sex, you know, we are the sun, we are the center of the universe that gives all life to everything else. And that can be almost an addictive sort of a thing when you become too used to it. So, you know, to all of my exes out there, I'm sorry.
I love that. So I was gonna say there is like, what is the dark side then, I guess, is that addictive quality of.
Yeah, it's sort of an inflation of ego that's maybe not the healthiest. You know, when you're constantly hearing all of these sort of amazing things about how mm-hmm. wonderful and beautiful, you know, you start to kind of wonder, you know, how true is it? Are they just mm-hmm. saying like what they think that they want me to hear because they think that I have this big ego that needs fed? Or, you know, throw in on top of it, for me, I am a Venus in Gemini. And we often get a not so great rap for being maybe a little less than honest, or maybe not as monogamous as people would like us to be. Mm. So definitely honesty and being upfront and open about our needs and our desires has become sort of the utmost importance for me going into all of my new relationships, just so, you know, that same sort of life-giving flame doesn't wind up burning people that don't mm-hmm. deserve it.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably a healthy way to look at it too. And, you know, I don't know. As someone who's friends with a lot of romance writers, We often joke that like romance is fan fiction more than reality. It's fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea, romance really is fantasy, right? And yeah. I think that, you know, the joke I have among my author friends is like, these problems could be fixed with one adult conversation. And what you said about, you know, just being honest, going into things, like, I just feel like that is like, may put it on bumper stickers and t-shirts, like just have adult conversations with people, mm-hmm. like in relationships, about sex, about whatever. Like, it's that to me is like a cure-all that I feel like we miss out on a lot.
Yeah, it took me a while to get there. And, you know, we're very big-hearted people. You know, we don't want to hurt anybody or make anybody feel like they're not good enough. And that can sometimes lead us to be, or at least me personally, less than honest with ourselves and our potential partners. And then you wind up mm-hmm. in these relationships that maybe aren't right. But because, you know, you do care about that person, you try and kind of contain a part of yourself or not share a part of yourself that you should sort of right off the bat. So I found that being just open about that and giving people sort of the opportunity to make their own decisions and have their own sort of sovereignty when it comes to engaging in that type of a relationship, whether it's just sexual or, you know, an actual like romantic relationship where you're, you know, seeing this person long term.
Yeah.
You know, honesty goes a long way. And then you wind up attracting these people that, despite all of your best efforts to kind of hold them at bay, they really just see you for who you are. And then sort of the right person mm-hmm. falls into place and they can survive all of that fire.
Oh, I like that. You're like being able to, they've seen what the fire actually is. It's not, you know, it's not an illusion to them. They know it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your wisdoms and on many topics. And I wish you all the best. When is the new book? Do you have a pub date for the new book?
I don't have a date yet. I would assume it will probably be around a year. So maybe mm-hmm. next fall, winter.
Okay. Well, something definitely to look forward to next spooky season. thank you so much. And good luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Witchlit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shenekar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram and Threads at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.